Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report. We are fresh off a three-day weekend where we observed Memorial Day. Apologies to anyone who missed the show, but that's why we were off. But we're back, and what we're going to do is we're going to give you 20% extra content every day the rest of this week. And not just that, 20% more Jordan Yule. How's it going, Jordan?
Hey, it's going great.
Thanks. Hold on, I'm gonna make you 20% bigger.
All right.
Just to give the people what they want. And also, by the way, 20% more of Jordan's cat in the background, which you might catch a glimpse of.
I think she's right behind me, actually.
Yeah. Jordan, welcome back. It's been 2 weeks. How has the lockdown been treating you since we last spoke?
John, I'm always tired, but I can't sleep, if that makes sense. But, you know, I was trying to count my blessings. It could be worse. I'm just thankful to be healthy right now. So trying to stay safe, stay inside. How about you?
My wife and I try to stay active. We go on bike rides and take walks, and our dogs take us outside. But yeah, you know, it's been months. So like everyone in America, I'm sure we would like to be able to, I was going to say, like, go to a bookstore, but then I realized we don't have those in America anymore. I don't know. Go somewhere. A movie, maybe. But we'll see. Turns out a lot of people have been going out and having a bit of fun. We're going to be turning to that story in just a few, as well as a ton of other news. Let's see. We're going to be checking in with how the 1% is doing in this pandemic. We're going to find out a few of the problems with being uber rich. We've got a new Biden ad against Trump. Going to evaluate that. And the reason I want to talk about this with you, Jordan, is that you're part of an organization that's put out some incredibly effective advertisements recently. So we're going to compare and contrast the official Biden campaign ads with some of yours and see, you know, maybe you like it, maybe you don't. We'll see. And also what's been going on in Central Park recently, a viral video that we're going to be breaking down as well. But before we get to all of that, thank you to everyone who's already in the chat. If you haven't already, please hit the like button. Like magic, when it hits 1,000, Jordan's cat will appear in the background, so you have that to look forward to. And please share the stream, all of that. We're going to be reading comments and super chats and Twitch comments as well, because like the rest of the TYT network, TDR is now available at twitch.com/TYT. Apologies. You can also see Staying Home with Josh Fox, The Conversation, Old School, and Happy Half Hour, as well as specials, including a special I'll be doing this Thursday with Brett Ehrlich. We're going to be doing some live commentary to Cenk Uygur's interview with Senator Bernard Sanders. So that should be a lot of fun. Quick heads up before we get going that today is the last day for the Shop TYT Memorial Day sale. If you head there, you can get 15% off site-wide, including this shirt, The Great Indoors. Very appropriate for the times that we're living in. And so take a look at that. And with that, why don't we jump into the news, Jordan? For many, this Memorial Day was a fairly solitary affair. Lockdowns continue in most parts of the country, but not everywhere. Let's check in with Jack's Bar and Grill in the Lake of the Ozarks. Okay, so there you saw a video that has just, I think, like 17 million views over this weekend of just a packed bar and grill. If there was a mask there, I didn't see it. Barely saw any clothing at all. And so, Jordan, thoughts on the festivities continuing?
I really don't know how to express myself in a way that's appropriate for your show, because this clip made me really angry and frustrated all weekend, because as we were talking about before the show started, when you see things like that and you see people just completely ignoring CDC guidelines and social distancing guidelines and suggestions to wear a mask, things like that, it's not just recklessness, it's also selfishness, because they put others around them in jeopardy as well. It's not just about protecting yourself from this illness. It's about the risk of being an asymptomatic carrier and giving it to other people. So to see people just blatantly disregard all of that to go outside for a weekend, for a holiday that most reasonable people are staying inside for, it demonstrates a level of selfishness, ignorance, and carelessness. But beyond that, there's this level of anger inside me when I see things like that, because people who behave like that are making things worse for everybody else. So this type of social distancing guidelines and quarantining and that kind of stuff to help reduce the curve, you know, it only goes so far. And then when you have people like this gathering in groups when it's still a serious risk, when 100,000 people have died and millions of people around the world have this, and you see people like that go out in large groups, just making it incredibly easy for this virus to continue to spread. I mean, how else are you supposed to feel other than angry?
Yeah, I'm scared, I guess. Yeah. Will the official number, at least on the tracker that I follow, will pass 100,000 while we're filming this episode. And, that's a fact. I understand that a significant portion of the population doesn't believe that. We'll get to that a little bit later on. And certainly the actual number is significantly higher. But it's super serious. And on one level, like when you see one person without a mask, like coughing on shopkeepers or something like that, that are wearing masks, it's like, well, Jesus, that's an assault. This, it's like, I mean, all those people know that they're endangering themselves. So it seems consensual. Of course, the thing is that they will then redistribute all over the region and potentially give it to other people, because I'm going to guess, I could be wrong and I don't know those people, I am not a psychic, that people who go to a party like that and don't wear masks probably are not the most diligent in the rest of their days as they're traveling around, going to stores, walking around and all of that. And that's what's so scary. I want to give you a little bit of information about the event, and we do have more on this. So, little shot of the promotional photos put out on Instagram of the party. Lots of people having fun. It was a zero ducks given party. Advertised on Facebook, had 1,600 responses. Now, they did post a list of the precautions they were taking, that they were going to do non-contact temperature scanning, and they were going to make hand sanitizer available. But the fact that nobody's wearing a mask and that they called it a zero ducks given party makes me think that those are for plausible deniability rather than a serious concern about the transmission of illness. That would be my guess.
Right. I mean, and from what we understand about asymptomatic carriers, that might not be enough. So someone could have it, not know they have it. And like you said, like just a few minutes ago, that people who attend this are likely going to be not very cautious in their other activities. So that asymptomatic risk, it greatly spikes. So we'll see as time progresses. But as we saw with the reopen protests in Michigan, it spread. People didn't know they had it. They brought it to that protest and spread, and people got sick. So we'll see. We'll see as this goes. But you know, not looking great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is the video that's been spread the most. But I'm sure you've seen boardwalk scenes and things like that. Beaches full of people. We're gonna have a little bit more of that too. And as I see that, I just think, God, I hope that we defy the odds, like that effectively a miracle happens. And that despite the fact that there is a chunk of the population that is acting in this way, that we won't have the second spike. It seems impossible to believe, but the numbers are trending down. Maybe we'll get lucky, you know, maybe we'll, you know, as a country, we'll get a royal flush on this. You know, we're taking our chances. Maybe that'll happen, and despite all of this irresponsibility, nothing bad will happen. Because I try to remember, and by the way, I'm going to read one more quote from that party that's going to frustrate you, but I try to remember that while we see these events like this, the protests or the party, we know from polls that most people still are taking this seriously, and that most people, even if their states open up, are not going to rush out. And if they do, they will social distance, and they will wear masks. So I try to remember that these are the outliers, that most people are being responsible, and that needs to be baked into our understanding of, you know, the likelihood of a second spike and all of that. But it's hard to be optimistic when you're looking at stuff like this.
Yeah, I really don't know what to say. I expressed before the show how frustrated I was with that, because people who, like you and I and your viewers and others that we know, who are taking it seriously, who are staying inside, who are wearing a mask, who are taking every precaution necessary to do our part to help prevent the spread of this disease, this virus, and to flatten the curve, like, our efforts are undercut by the selfishness of people like this. So it's frustrating, because, you know, it's not easy. It's not fun to be stuck inside for weeks on end, to not be able to go and see your friends and family,
100%.
to not go outside, you know, just for like a walk, without feeling concerned about you putting yourself at risk or others at risk, things like that. I mean, even like mild forms of entertainment, like going to see a movie or going out to grab a bite to eat with friends, like, you can't do that right now. But these people are putting themselves before not just the rest of the country, but the rest of the world, because they're insanely selfish. So I'm not sure how to feel other than frustrated with these people.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so if you're frustrated now, let me read you one quote. This is from a pool party attendee, Tyler Krantzer, who said, "I felt fine and feel fine now. It was a little crowded and the bartenders were absolutely slammed. Now that I think about it, probably not a great idea, but there is no law when you're drinking the claw," referring to White Claw, the popular hard seltzer. I mean, the guy's got a point. You are not bound by the laws of gods or men while drinking what amounts to hand sanitizer diluted slightly. What could affect you when your body has been scoured by the claw?
That's true. That's true. Yeah, science has shown that if you're drinking the claw, your antibodies just skyrocket. You're
exactly.
Fine.
And by the way, I saw the funniest news to come out about this story was that I saw, as of, I think it was this morning or maybe yesterday, the St. Louis County Department of Public Health advised everyone at the party to self-quarantine. They're not going to do that. They were at the party. Oh, they're going to be like, you know what? That does sound like the responsible thing to do. Good luck.
Yeah, going from the no ducks given party to self-quarantining. That's definitely going to happen.
Yeah. Once your ducks are gone, you don't get them back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
CNN sent a reporter to a beach in Alabama to see whether people were voluntarily socially distancing and wearing masks and all of that, and talk to a few people about why they're not concerned. Take a look at this.
I mean, everybody's got to go somehow. You know what I mean?
You mean die?
Yeah, but in a way, like, I mean, I don't want to die, but I mean, if that's what God has in store for my life, then that's okay.
My family has the same mindset as me, and we kind of just agreed that if we get it, we get it. We're going to handle it as a family and just get over it, because that's what family does.
Just like the flu, right?
Well, it's not just like the flu. It's far more contagious.
Well, I know, but people die from the flu also.
They do die from the flu.
So to me, that's just the way I look at it.
Do you have any concerns about being at the beach with so many people with your children?
Not at all.
How come you're not worried at all that someone could be sick and walk by and get you sick?
Because there's enough wind and air that it's going to clear it all out of here.
But the wind and the air don't clear it away. Well, there's no proof of anything like that. There's wind and air everywhere in this world.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm not worried.
Do you ever wear a mask?
No. My wife and kids do. I don't.
How come you don't?
I just feel comfortable that I'm going to be okay.
But the mask isn't to keep you okay. It's to keep your wife and kids okay. To protect them.
I get it. The survival rate is so high, I think...
You're not worried about them getting sick because they're going to live.
We're all going to get sick for something eventually.
President Trump is part of this conversation.
I mean, if he's not wearing a mask, I'm not going to wear a mask. If he's not worried, I'm not worried.
The president.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so there's a mix of things there. Basically, we're going to be talking about misinformation in a bit, but this is just... Yeah, this is what it looks like when people have been told for 2 months... a whole bunch of just BS about how likely you are to get it, how deadly it is, all of that. And the people they look up to are being completely irresponsible, and so they too are being irresponsible.
Yeah, I mean, just the cognitive dissonance with some of these people. But I would assume, you know, a lot of these, like the guy who cited Trump, and, you know, typically Alabama's a pretty red area. You know, the justification for restricting someone's right to choose and have bodily autonomy regarding terminating a pregnancy, and how they are so beholden to the concept of life, and how that they love that so much that they're willing to restrict someone else's choices. But when it comes to this and their role in spreading a virus that could kill actual people, adults, children, whomever, like fully formed people. They're completely careless. They don't care. It's total disregard for the safety and well-being of others. Even the guy who was not wearing a mask, but his kids and wife do. I mean, yeah. What you're going outside and you're risking getting it and then giving it to your family. And his reason is that, you know, they might not die. I'll never understand this mindset, because it just, you don't fully know. And the flu is already dangerous, but this is even way more dangerous. And then again, like we talked about in the last segment, people are just as careless in their other actions as well. So we're going to see, I see my cats behind me. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see, like, we're going to see spikes throughout that region. And like we talked about in the last time I was on, the carelessness in these areas, like the Ozarks and now in Alabama, they're just going to, you know, this virus is going to reach areas that were otherwise hard to hit because of people's carelessness.
Yeah. Hope not. But, yeah, and look, any of those individuals, I'm not trying to, like, harp on them. Millions of people believe the things that they believe, and we know exactly why they believe those things. We've been following the reasons every day here on the show. I'm sure Jordan and I have talked about most of this misinformation multiple times over the past few months, but this is what it looks like. There are, like, the people, like, we have government supposed to protect people, supposed to help the American people, but instead, it has mainly existed as propaganda to get the American people to willingly throw themselves back out there to aid Wall Street, and to just give people an excuse to just, you know, like, sort of lazily fall into fatalism. Like, yeah, if I get it, I get it. I don't know. Lots of things kill you. They're all the same. Everything's the same that can kill you. And that's what we're seeing there. And it reminds me that Trump, like there's all this, like, super sophisticated trying to analysis of why he succeeded when other Republicans didn't during the 2016 primary. He's the guy that tells you all the hatreds and fears that you had were right. And he's the guy that will tell you that every one of your worst, most irresponsible impulses going forward, he will tell you that that is, in fact, the noble, macho, patriotic thing to do. It's really as simple as that. People want to go to the beach and sit there and feel like they're making the right decision, even though it's irresponsible, even though it contradicts so much of what they probably say they believe about responsibility and, you know, all of that. And even protecting your family. Like, the idea that, like, yeah, maybe they'll get sick. Maybe they won't die. How many of those people are armed to the teeth at home for fear of predators coming to their house? Anyway, so that's why I wanted to show this video. It's out there, man. They're all over the beaches, so be careful. I really hope that Alabama's okay. I don't know why it would be, but I hope that it is. That CNN reporter, by the way, said that him and his crew saw zero masks. I don't even believe that. That's impossible. But he says that on that beach, they did not see a single person with a mask.
I think people seem to think that just going outside is safe in general. Mm-hmm. I think they think that the problem is mostly inside or, you know, in restaurants, houses, that kind of stuff. Gatherings inside, they seem to think that the air will make it dissipate. Mm-hmm. But when you're congregating in large groups like that, it's still a risk.
There's a lot of misinformation out there about coronavirus, but really, how many people believe these crazy things? Well, we now know, at least a little bit, from a recent Yahoo News poll. 44% of Republicans, for instance, believe that Bill Gates is plotting to use a mass COVID-19 vaccination campaign as a pretext to implant microchips in billions of people and monitor their movements. 44%. Only 26% say it's false. So when you see the 44%, you might think a majority say it's not true. But no, a lot of them are just like, well, maybe. One quarter say, I'm certain Bill Gates is not going to be tracking our movements with microchips distributed through vaccines. Like 44% of the Republican Party is at least one Alex Jones crazy, is how I see it, Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah, so with this misinformation and how it manifests in people's ignorance toward coronavirus, I think there's two culprits here. So you have Fox News and the right-wing media infrastructure at large. And they're, at the onset of this crisis, sought to downplay the severity, downplay the risks, just misinform viewers in a defense of Trump because his response was inadequate. The second culprit here is mostly Facebook, but tech and social media giants at large. And people are the conspiracy theories are rampant on those platforms. And because most people get their news now from those platforms, it's really insidious in how it infects people's viewpoints and these types of things. So you could have these completely baseless claims spread because they're eye catching, because they're sensationalized and fake. And then the end result is people believing things like this. So it's truly dangerous, and there's no really oversight mechanism for Fox. But, you know, it is on Facebook. It's on Facebook to police its own platform. When you have the largest platform, social media platform in the world, most people are getting their news from it. That's dangerous when you have things like that that are misinforming and leading to real-world consequences. I think there should be some sort of culpability and responsibility on the platforms to police the content on there.
Yeah, I mean, we know that they have been incredibly hesitant to do that. Even when they, so a lot of the times Facebook has just sort of thrown their hands up and said, this isn't our responsibility, particularly when the falsehoods are in like political ads. Even when they say they're going to do something, we find out later that they put almost no resources to it, or they're unable to keep up with the rapid spread of fake news. It seems like at least as big of a problem this time around as in 2016, despite the fact that they've had close to 4 years now to do something about it. You know, I know, and the thing is, they're in a rough position because, like, you know, YouTube, they did a little bit of cracking down on people spreading coronavirus-specific misinformation, and they've been attacked. And you've probably seen Trump saying, you know, we're going to look into these social media networks that are cracking down on conservatives. They're not cracking down on conservatives. They're cracking down on obvious lies that are going to get people killed. But that's going to be weaponized by the right because they have to present themselves 100% of the time as victims. Now, continue.
Oh, no, I had nothing. Go ahead.
Okay, well, so here's the thing. I wanted to show you this because you're not going to be able to see most of this. But this is that vaccine thing by different groups. So, for instance, you can see that at the very top, people for whom Fox News is their chief source of information, 50% say that that vaccine thing is true compared to 26% who don't. The thing is, if you break it down by, like, people who watch MSNBC, 15% of those think it's true. People who voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, 12% think it's true. Because the thing is, we should remember that when it's specifically about vaccines and misinformation, that's kind of more of a centrist, lefty sort of area of misinformation in my experience, rather than the right. They've opportunistically taken it up in this case because they like the idea that there's a, like, leftist billionaire that they see anyway, and they don't want to believe that coronavirus is serious. But for the most part, vaccines, that there's a wide range of people who are willing to believe almost anything about those.
Yeah.
Here, let's jump into some other misinformation. Oh, actually, sort of related to the vaccine. So it's one thing to say, do you think that Bill Gates is going to implant you with a cyber chip? But what about, will you actually get vaccinated? So Clinton voters are nearly 30 points more likely to say they will, 72%, than Trump voters, 44%. A majority of Trump voters say they either plan to skip the shot, 29%, or that they aren't sure, 27%. So that means that, like, this miracle that we're all waiting for, that hypothetically would allow right-wingers to get what they want, which is to go back out there, have everything reopen, you don't have to wear a mask and all that stuff, less than half say they even plan on taking the vaccine once it comes, even though Trump, now, he's occasionally said the vaccines aren't necessary, that's true, but for the most part says, we're pushing forward, I've got Operation Warp Speed, it's going to be awesome. Less than half of them even plan to take it once it's available.
Yeah, I mean, so my knee-jerk reaction is, you know, so be it. Let them suffer. But the thing is, and then they then pose a risk to people they might come in contact with who might not be able to afford it or can't access the vaccine. We've seen conversations around access and affordability of a potential vaccine, and mm-hmm. and no one really is willing to guarantee that it would be accessible to everybody. So we're going to see a malicious for-profit healthcare system impact vaccine rollout as well, whenever that comes. So it's just issues on both sides of this thing too. So people who aren't doing this aren't just putting themselves at risk and you know, are worthy of mockery. They're also putting others at risk, and that's deeply concerning.
Yeah. Look, finally, on that, when you break down all the demographics, only half of Americans say they plan at this point to take the vaccine. 100,000 people are dead. This is the solution. This is the solution that we're like praying will be ready in just a year of this thing devastating the country. And as you walk around, you know, as you go to your Memorial Day pool party, half the people in there both want to pretend that this thing isn't a threat and won't do the very easy thing that would make it not a threat to them personally. Jesus. Okay, there's more though. Let me get your reaction to this. So a majority of Fox News viewers, 53%, along with nearly half of Trump voters at 49%, think hydroxychloroquine is an effective treatment for COVID-19. So all that that we went through, half of them think, oh yeah, no, they proved it. It's effective. The WHO just pulled another study because they thought it was unethical to continue it, what with the risks it was posing to those subjects.
Yep, exactly. I was just going to mention that. That's, you know, but then they just move to discrediting the WHO. It's mm-hmm, like never, mm-hmm. they can never admit that, you know, maybe their worldview doesn't entirely stack up. It's just every single thing. No, everyone's out to get them. The WHO is out to get them. Bill Gates is out to get them. Big Pharma is out to get them. Everybody. Instead of submitting, hey, maybe this global pandemic that's killed hundreds of thousands of people here and millions more around the world, maybe this is actually a bad thing that we need to take serious. No, it can't be that. The mm-hmm. world is out to get us.
Yeah. They might be onto something with Big Pharma being out to get them, at least their money. But yeah, oh God. And like after like all the studies, it doesn't matter. He succeeded just by going up there every day and saying the word over and over again, and then saying that he takes it. And a bunch of them want to take it, like when they asked him this poll. Like 41% are like, no, if it was available, I'd start taking it now. Like that doesn't mean that they're all taking it, but they all wish that they could. It's just amazing. More Trump voters, I should say, or Fox viewers, don't trust the CDC than do. The CDC, which is just there to stop pandemics from destroying America, they don't trust them. And why should they? They went to school. Okay, let's see. Feel free. I mean,
I don't want to say it. Go ahead.
Let's see. Majorities of Trump voters and Republicans and Fox News viewers, 65% of Fox News viewers, believe that Chinese scientists engineered coronavirus in a lab from which it accidentally escaped. Not think, well, there might be something to that, or it could turn out to be true. They're like, no, Chinese scientists. That's what happened. 65%. And why shouldn't they? There have been people on Fox saying it over and over again for literally months.
Yeah, that whole theory doesn't really make sense. Not that anything that we've talked about in this segment makes sense. But this theory that like China has like bioengineered this thing into release to the world, it just think about that for 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. China engineers a virus to infect the world. So what? So the entire world blames it on China. What's the net gain there? Mm-hmm. Like all you do is like stigmatize yourself to the entire world. That makes zero sense. You see a lot of right wingers pushing this theory for what? I mean, it's like some xenophobic, national interest, foreign policy ploy to smear an enemy. Yeah. That's it. The theory that they engineered it doesn't make sense because all they would do is be shooting themselves in the foot. Not really surprised.
At least in this case, they add from which it accidentally escaped. That's tricky.
Oh.
But here's the thing about conspiracy theories is that they're almost always obviously not internally consistent. So the thing is, we are surrounded by millions of Americans who believe two things simultaneously. That this was a bioweapon cooked up by the Chinese and either intentionally or accidentally released. A bioweapon designed to kill Americans, to destroy the American economy. They believe that. They also believe it's not that deadly. Come on. It's like the regular flu. I don't need to do anything. I don't need to wear a mask. Come on. You're making it up. It's a hoax. It's not serious. Deadly Chinese bioweapon. I don't have to do anything about it, though. Really? Really? I can just go on living. Come on, man. Choose a lane. Choose a crazy lane. But they won't.
Well, it's like at the onset, they were up in arms about China not being honest about their death totals while claiming that ours were overinflated. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, it's deadly there, but it's fine here. It's just this complete disconnect. I mean, that boils down to xenophobia. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I mean, just like this projection and xenophobic attitude towards places like China. It's this, this terrible, deadly virus there, but here we're it's not going to affect us, or everyone's, blowing it out of proportion. Yeah. All right.
One final number, and this number will only go up over time. I'm shocked it's as low as it is right now, but this is something we've been predicting for some time. 52% of Trump voters and 55% of Fox News viewers insist that the current death count, the official death count, is too high. So when we constantly ask, why are they taking it more seriously? We sort of understand one reason. They don't think anything that they've been told is true. I mean, I don't know for any individual Trumper if they think 75,000 people died or 20,000 people or 50 people. I don't know. But they definitely believe that it isn't 100,000, and so they don't have to care about it.
And what's wild about that is experts have said that the death count is higher. It's higher than what we see now because people are dying without being tested. People aren't being included, and there's discrepancies in death counts and autopsies and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And people just don't know they have it. So experts have said that the death toll is higher than what it is right now. So as that number increases, so does the actual death toll.
Yeah, but those estimates come from scientists, so naturally suspect. Yeah, we know that people are dying at home. We know thousands in New York. You can see the excess numbers. And you don't have to believe necessarily that those excess deaths were caused by coronavirus, but you could at least offer an alternative. Alien spiders, I don't know. What is it that's killing all of these people that is not the pandemic wreaking havoc? What's diabetes? What all of a sudden is killing so many people? Come up with something. And whatever that is, let's also take that seriously. Over the weekend, senior White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett made news when he had this to say about the upcoming economic recovery.
Do you think it's possible that unemployment will be in double digits in November?
Yes, I do. But I think that all the signs of economic recovery are going to be raging everywhere. And the only thing we're going to really be debating as economists is, are we going to get back to where we were? Is it going to be kind of a long haul to get that? We don't have our capital stock hasn't been destroyed. Our human capital stock is ready to get back to work. And so that there are lots of reasons to believe that we can get going way faster than we have in previous crises.
But I just want to underscore what you're saying is that as the president is on the ballot in November, you think there could be double-digit unemployment still?
I think that, yes, unemployment will be something that moves back slower. I think it could be better than
so we should acknowledge that when it comes to the economic recovery for actual workers, he's acknowledging that, no, by November, you're still going to be screwed. But he also threw out the human capital stock line there. Jordan, what did you think when you first saw that?
I mean, this is yet another example of how the ruling class thinks about people like you and me and the viewers and workers everywhere. So they see workers as disposable objects. They're instruments for capitalist gain. They want to exploit your labor. We've seen time and time again the comments from the ruling class about how dying for the economy is a noble, patriotic thing to do. How just Chris Christie just carelessly said, you know, there's going to be deaths, but we need to reopen the country. We're seeing comments from Republican leaders and legislators. We're seeing people celebrate market gains on the back of historic unemployment numbers. Time and time again, they've told you how they feel about you. If you come out of this without the understanding that they do not care about you, that workers don't need to organize and you know, workers of the world need to unite, I don't know what to tell you. Because here in a moment of historic suffering around the world, the most privileged and wealthy among us are out there saying they don't care. What more is it going to take?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and many people have acknowledged, I'm seeing it in the comments right now, that it sounds like a rebranding of slavery. I get what his defense will be. He'll say, I was making an analogy to World War II or whatever. But as you pointed out, they have been treating workers like some sort of cog in the machine that they're willing to just shred to get things started again the entire time. So we have to understand Kevin Hassett's comment in the context of what he and virtually all of Republicans and unfortunately a lot of Democrats have been saying about the working class. I am sick of hearing people like that who are tapped into, you know, government power, that have an influence over the economy, that talk about workers as like one of the things our economy has got going for it. I don't give a damn about the economy, except insofar as it benefits those workers. Workers don't exist to serve the economy. The economy serves for the workers. That's what it's supposed to be. It's not in any way. I don't know if it ever was in America, but that's supposed to be what we're working towards. And this sort of flub, whether it's, you know, whether it's a wink and a nod to slavery or whatever, shows that, no, he's perfectly happy with the way things are going. And when the numbers start to rise, when the coronavirus cases start to rise with the people that are being sent back, and we saw, like, you know, you probably saw the hairdressers that were symptomatic for several days and served like 140 people, and then some of them are probably going to get it too. Like, we're going to see these stories going up, and that's why we have to respond forcefully to this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're signaling it to us loud and clear. They don't care. We are disposable. They don't want to help us. They don't care about your suffering. And efforts like giving you $1,200 once, maybe twice, are nothing more than efforts just to placate you and shut you up. And it's just enough to help you get along, but not enough to keep you afloat. Yeah. So it puts you into this position that we've talked about before, where you're then forced with the choice of going back to work into unsafe situations or starving. I mean, it's completely unfair. It's a rigged system from the start. And even in times of crisis and times of historic suffering, this is how it manifests.
You know, it's amazing that you mentioned the fact that they will have to make the choice between going back or starving, because Hassett was also asked about increasing funding for food stamps and said he hadn't raised the topic with Trump, saying, quote, I have not discussed with the president. Yeah, I have a feeling that probably wasn't one of his priorities, actually. And, you know, we talk constantly about the fact that workers were hypothetically given $1,200. I know a lot of people haven't ever gotten that. Never will. And weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks have gone by without any additional aid. I just saw Mitch McConnell, a headline said, we're going to consider a fifth bill in a month or so. Yeah, it'll be fine. Rent won't be due. Landlords are going to be very patient, I'm assuming. And we also know stories. I just want to continue to put this on people's radar. When the moratoriums on evictions lapses, do you have any idea how many people are going to be evicted or lose their homes on the same day? It is going to be an economic crisis to rival the coronavirus. And everyone in a position of power to do something about it is pretending that it isn't coming. Except for AOC. Yep. She's doing a pretty good job of talking about it.
Yeah. It's already starting in Oklahoma. There's places in Oklahoma where that moratorium has ended, and they're starting to process evictions now. But where are they going to go?
Where are they going
to
go?
What are they supposed to do? How are you going to socially distance in a homeless shelter? And then what if, as we saw earlier, like we're seeing a historic, I mean, this is kind of a tangent, but I saw earlier this week or last week, we're going to see a pretty bad hurricane season. How are people, are our emergency preparedness centers and, you know, disaster centers, are they ready? Like, we have all of these different areas in which we're completely unprepared for the the magnitude of this crisis, and just everyone's ignoring it because we need to protect small businesses and we need to, you know, pump up the stock market and make sure banks get liquidity. That's their priorities. Time and time again, that's always their priority. They do not care about you. Like, I don't know what it's going to take for people to realize that they will never care about you.
I want you to take a look at this article that I saw in Bloomberg that I was sure had to be fake. And I looked and looked for evidence that I was being fooled. That, like, when I will tweet out a link to an Onion article, there's always someone who's like, hey, dude, that's the Onion. And I'm like, I know that maybe that had happened to me here, but I don't think that it is. I want you to take a look at the front page of this article. Quandary for high flyers, how to travel safely to your yacht. Which would be a great Onion headline right there, but it isn't. It is an in-depth analysis of a problem and a solution. The problem being that, sure, once you're on your yacht traveling on the high seas, you're safe. But how do you get there through the zombie hordes, the unwashed, diseased masses? And that's almost how they put it. So they say, this is like the first line, it's a modern quandary for the ultra-wealthy. A yacht awaits at harbor, but how to safely reach it without risking exposure to the germ-ridden masses? They use the term that I use jokingly. So they have a solution. Global aviation company VistaJet is going to send you on a freshly sanitized jet to your yacht, assuming it's moored in Malta. Lest anyone be worried about the island being germ-ridden, a press release notes that the World Health Organization singled out Malta as a role model for other countries in the fight against COVID-19. Now, thankfully, the exact sort of people who've been trained to not trust the WHO don't have yachts. So that should work to reassure the billionaire class. We have more on this, Jordan, but what are your thoughts?
Oh, my God. I saw that yesterday and thought it was a joke at first, but no, this ran in Bloomberg, which is not exactly the real, like, the press of the people, but it just unbelievably tone deaf and really shows where how, you know, the ruling class and their priorities are. It's not about how do we, you know, fix this collectively. It's how do I personally escape this so I don't have to face any consequences. And these are people who are already ultra privileged. They're not going to have any problem accessing healthcare, getting medical assistance if they should contract this virus or anything like that. But here we have a glowing write-up about a private jet that'll take you to your yacht. That's great. That's awesome. Never once do we see the stories and publications like this of workers or people who are, you know, stringing together every penny that they possibly can to make ends meet or facing eviction or things like that, having utilities shut off in the midst of a crisis. No, it's the billionaires who are truly oppressed here, John.
Exactly. 100%. I mean, it might as well just be like, you know, Elon Musk has finally set up his moon colonies. How can you get one of the first spots? That's what we're seeing here. And by the way, I'm not going to say specifically Bloomberg, but like all the economic elites are like, it's going to be fine. Coronavirus isn't a big deal. Let's get this economy moving once again. Oh, by the way, how are you going to safely get to your yacht? Because even being in your car is too dangerous with how bad this disease actually is. So a bit of a mixed message there. Let me give you a little bit more information about the solution, because it doesn't just end at the airport in Malta. But then another thorny problem, how to get to the marina safely. A pre-sanitized car will ferry clients on this next leg of their journey. Yachts will be pre-stocked to client specifications because members must sign an agreement stating that they won't stop anywhere on their way from jet to ship. Leave the yacht while it's moored or disembark on local islands. What will it cost? We don't know for sure, but we do know that the jet that will take you there costs at least $16,000 an hour, and the car service carries an additional fee. I don't know what it's going to cost, but I'm going to say a lot, probably. Could probably pay for a lot of testing and all that. My last comment, tax the rich. Just start taxing. I'll tell you when to stop.
Yeah, seconded.
We have now reached 100,000 dead in America. And on the weekend where this happened, Donald Trump marked the occasion with a somber round of golf, something that was not lost on a lot of media, and his opponent, Joe Biden, who released this ad. So now, spoiler alert, it did get to Trump. We'll have his reaction. But I'm curious, because you've been involved in the creation of other ads pointing out how little care Trump seems to have for the coronavirus. What did you make of this? Do you think it was effective?
Sure. I thought it was fine. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, knock my socks off or anything like that. But it was good. I think it shows Trump's carelessness. I don't know how effective it'll be at convincing anybody or, you know, flipping people who are maybe undecided, things like that. It's tough to know with ads like this who really how it's going to impact people. But we'll see. I mean, people seem to like it, but you know, the golfing thing really isn't a new line of criticism.
Yeah.
Trump has been doing this throughout his entire tenure. So to me, it felt just kind of redundant because, you know, we've been talking about this since the onset. He golfs a lot. He's golfed like, what, 250 times? So yeah, maybe it's like it didn't resonate with me as much just because I've heard this line of criticism a lot. Mm-hmm. I think time and time again, I've talked about this, and I know you have as well. People need to run on things and not just point out that Trump is bad, because we've known Trump is bad since before 2016. Like, this isn't – that's not new. So we – not only do we need to point out his inadequacies and how he's failing on this at this crisis, you need to run on something that will inspire people. And that will get people energized and out to vote.
Yeah.
So that should really be the underlying message in a lot of this campaign messaging, because as we've seen and we talked about earlier in the show, doesn't even matter. That message isn't going to resonate with a large portion of America because of how they get their news and how they – you know, they believe Fox and things like that. So – a lot of people don't even think Trump's doing a bad job because of X, Y, and Z issue related to the virus. They don't think it's serious. Like, they don't think it's a crisis. You know, we talked about that at the onset. So that kind of undercuts the effectiveness of this ad, is that people are so indoctrinated into thinking this isn't even an issue.
Yeah, I mean, many people don't think that we've hit 100,000. They just don't believe it. You can put it on a graph, but they're not going to believe it. But I do want to correct one thing, because in the same way that they think that's fake news, Jordan, you were just fake news because you said he played golf 250 times, which is crazy. How could he possibly play golf 250 times? He has, in fact, played it 218 times, which,
jeez.
Like, I get that I don't play golf, so maybe I'm biased, is more than anyone needs to play golf in their entire life, I think. I don't think I've played sports 218 times in my life, and he's done it. As president, I don't like anything as much as he likes playing golf. And anyway, of course, substantively, those golf trips have apparently cost, according to an estimate from like 2 months ago, at that point, $133 million to the American taxpayer. So it's an expensive habit as well. But anyway, on the ad, I think, look, if people aren't taking it seriously, you can try to make them take it seriously. I don't know if it's going to work. Like you said, a large percentage of the population has already written off the entire thing and don't care about it. I think the versions of that ad that are less focused on the golf, which I agree is sort of offensive, especially considering that Trump he attacked Obama for golfing back when Ebola had killed two people. Far less than 100,000, I hear. Yeah, I think that like ads that show his statements, that show the lies that he had been spreading about it, seem more effective to me. And again, more effective still is if you then pair that with, here are the specific things that Joe Biden wants to do. Again, there's a huge chunk of the population that isn't going to give a damn about that. But I think that if you're a potential prospective voter for Joe Biden, then give him an idea of what you would do to make sure that the next virus doesn't hit us nearly as hard. That would be my suggestion. You want to see Trump's response? Just one.
Sure.
I'll limit myself to one. Some stories about the fact that in order to get outside and perhaps even a little exercise, I played golf over the weekend. The fake and totally corrupt news makes it sound like a mortal sin. I knew this would happen. What they didn't say is that this is my first golf in almost 2 months. Oh, you poor baby. You had to wait 2 months while this whole pandemic thing was going on. Yeah, he went out there to get a little bit of exercise. There's no gym in the White House, and I'm not going to say anything, but you can all make your own evaluation as to whether his true commitment is to exercise. Oh, he likes playing golf. Okay, just be consistent. Yeah. You said leaders shouldn't golf during disasters, and don't. Anyway, it's the least important thing going on right now, but we'll see. Right now, that's what Biden's got in terms of his ads. Over the weekend, an altercation that was filmed at Central Park left many, just so angry. I want to show it to you. You've probably already seen it, but here is Central Park Karen.
Would you please stop? Sir, I'm asking you to stop.
Please don't come close to me.
Sir, I'm asking you to stop recording me.
Please don't come close to me.
Please take your phone off.
Please don't come close to me.
And I'm taking a picture and calling the cops.
Please call the cops. Please call the cops.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like.
Excuse me? I'm sorry, I'm in the Ramble, and there is a man, African-American, he has a bicycle helmet. He is recording me and threatening me and my dog. There is an African-American man, I am in Central Park, he is recording me and threatening myself and my dog. And my... I'm sorry, I can't hear you either. I'm being threatened by a man in the Ramble. Please send the cops immediately. I'm in Central Park in the Ramble. I don't know.
Thank you.
Okay, that's one of the worst things I've seen in a very long time, because everyone watching that knows what she was trying to do. Why she was, like, she was trying to make it sound as if she was being chased by a guy with a machete, and that if she was not saved in mere seconds, he would kill her. And in America, what happens when cops show up on a scene and an African-American male, as she says, is believed to be threatening people? We have an idea of what would happen. I have a feeling she probably does too. And she knew that when she decided to make the threat and tried to sell it with an Oscar quality performance there on that call.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure everyone watching, everyone is just similarly frustrated. You said it. She knew exactly what she was doing. She made it pretty clear at the onset that the guy was black. And she even threw in the bicycle helmet thing. I think it was kind of subtle, but she's like, with a bicycle helmet. Well, what other purpose is that supposed to do other than to imply to the dispatcher that this guy might be dangerous or have a weapon? I have a friend who, growing up, he was pulled over by the police, and the police tried to use his football helmet and say he played high school football and say that was a weapon. So I think she was just looking for something else to make him sound even more dangerous. And then as the dog panicked, her voice similarly went into a shriek. And people have also, like, people have, like, found on her Instagram, her dog's Instagram, this dog is always mysteriously injured. This woman does not seem well. She's now subject to a ton of scrutiny. Her employer is cracking down on her. But, you know, the underlying thing is she was weaponizing her whiteness to try to put a black guy who was just minding his own business for the most part in harm's way. She knew what she was doing, and she knew the risks associated with police activity with black men, and she was trying to use that to an advantage, and that could have put him in danger or even ended his life. It's absolutely grotesque.
Yeah, and for people who might not have read about that situation, what was going on around there, I mean, there's added layers of irony that she was actually breaking the rules by keeping her dog unleashed in an area where she's not supposed to. He apparently was in the park to watch birds, just to give an idea how dangerous he was. He was there to watch birds, the most passive hobby I think I've ever heard of in my life. He was worried that having dogs constantly running around could be bad for the birds, that it could injure them or something like that. And so he had offered a treat to the dog or something so that she would put her leash on so that the dog wouldn't come over to get the treats. She says that she doesn't know what was in the treats, and that was the threat. Because he was offering the treats, it could be potentially deadly to her and her dog. So that's why she made the call and implied that the guy had a rocket launcher aimed at her or something like that, and was so cavalier with his life. As you pointed out, her employer has put her on administrative leave and said, "We take these matters very seriously and we do not condone racism of any kind. They're doing an investigation. We'll see what ends up happening with that." She has put out a statement saying, "I sincerely and humbly apologize to everyone, especially to that man, his family. It was unacceptable, and I humbly and fully apologize to everyone who's seen that video, everyone that's been offended, everyone who thinks of me in a lower light, and I understand why they do." She says her life is being destroyed right now. It's a fine apology. I mean, some people will see it as she's attempting to stem the damage to herself, which I get.
Yeah, I mean, she's lucky that nothing happened. You know, she's, that guy's here. He goes about his day today, which is great. In so many other circumstances where people have done that and used that to their advantage over such trivial issues, like putting your dog on a leash, you know, other people in his situation might not have been here.
Yeah.
So she's extremely fortunate. I don't know how I feel specifically about kind of like an online reaction and getting her in trouble at work. Not sure how I feel about that entirely. It's kind of complicated, but she feels some shame, and she should, because, you know, she could have gotten an innocent guy killed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't generally love identifying people or hunting them down unless they did something violent, which, yes, theoretically this could have been, or if they're like a candidate or something like that and they're doing this sort of thing, then people need to know. But we need to cover it because people need to know that this stuff is going on. I mean, we've done a million cases, more or less, million stories more or less like this. It would have been very easy for us to wake up, you and I discuss this story, it's this man was killed by the cops, and a video comes out showing that she had been totally making it up. Like, we've seen that story many times. Hopefully people learn by seeing this experience. I doubt it, because nothing seems to be getting better. But yeah, people's utter frustration with her and how she just weaponized her whiteness there, I totally understand. Over the past few years, we've talked several times about Donald Trump and his campaign's unwillingness to pay cities for the protection and services they provide for his rallies and events and things like that. Now, more time has passed, so surely he must have made good on those bills by now. Apparently not. Joining us now to provide an update on this story, Editor-at-Large for the Center for Public Integrity, Dave Leventhal. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Hey, good to be with you, John.
Good to have you here. So this is something that we've talked about before. Can you provide our viewers who might not know about some of this, some of the numbers we're talking about here?
And indeed, it's not a new story, but there's a lot of new context in the sense that first reported and had an investigation into this matter last year, in June of last year, there was about $840,000 worth of police and public safety bills across 10 different municipalities around the country that had hosted Trump rallies. They went to the Trump campaign. The Trump campaign never paid them. And these cities, as you could imagine, were not too happy about that. Flash forward to this past April. We're in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis, the coronavirus crisis. Many of these cities already cash-strapped are feeling just that much more pressure financially and are basically saying, hey, look, you know, Trump, you came to our town, gave you lots of police services, public safety services. You never paid the bills that we sent you. We really need that money now more than ever. Right now, it's $1.8 million across 14 wow. cities that Donald Trump's campaign is on the hook for. And so it's basically more cities, more money, but the same story from the Trump campaign, which is we are not going to pay those bills because in their opinion, they don't feel like they should have to.
Yeah. And $1.8 million for you and me, that might be an impossible sum to pay. But theoretically, he says that he is a billionaire. He could write a check to pay off that amount today, which especially in the context of a pandemic would certainly look good. Just to be clear, while not every politician pays these bills, it is generally the case that they do reimburse cities for these services, right?
It's a sticky situation because you've had in the past some Democrats and some Republicans running for president who will these bills receive from different municipalities for police services. The case that they typically make is, well, look, if we're coming to a town and we're causing some tumult and we're causing services to be diverted to our rally, to our event, then yeah, sure, we're going to help those cities out. The other side of the story, and this is what we hear from the Trump campaign, and also too the Obama campaign and the Clinton campaign had not paid some bills, at least in the past, is that, hey, look, this is not something that the campaign is on the hook for. The Secret Service coordinates security. The Secret Service coordinates police protection. So as a result, with the Secret Service. Well, we talked to the Secret Service. What did they say? They said, well, we ask these municipalities for the help. We get the help, but we don't get money from Congress appropriated to us to reimburse the municipalities. So it's this weird catch-22, John, that nobody really wants to take responsibility, but the cities themselves, the local governments, they're the ones holding the bag in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we should understand that while, you know, a campaign is going on, we expect that, you know, politicians are going to have events, especially if it's a presidential campaign. But Donald Trump has been sort of unique in holding these massive rallies really outside of the normal sort of structure of an election. And so if you're going to go to these extra lengths to have these sorts of events, it would seem to be clear, especially, or seem to be a wise decision, especially when you're constantly touting how supportive of law enforcement you are and how supportive they are of you, that he would go the distance, at least, and pay this back. Do we know if, in all the time that you've been reporting on these stories, especially now with these cities saying we need this money, especially in the context of a pandemic, have there been any successes in getting reimbursement?
The only time that cities have been able to get Donald Trump's campaign to pay for one of these events is when the event is being conducted at a city-owned facility. So sometimes Donald Trump will come and he'll come to a convention center or an arena that's owned by a city government, in which case they can, well, Trump campaign, sign here on the dotted line, we want the money up front when you rent this facility. But oftentimes Donald Trump is going to a privately owned facility, or going to a facility that may be owned by a city but managed by a third party. In that case, the cities actually have very little leverage to be able to compel Donald Trump's campaign or any campaign, the Biden campaign, be it what it may, to pay up. So that's where it can get technical, but it can also just really determine whether a city is going to get the money or not.
And it seems like the cities might be sort of learning this lesson. You found evidence that some are not even billing anymore. They're not even bothering to try to get the money.
Yeah, that's true. And every different city has a different way to approach political campaigns and presidential campaigns. In particular, that they just say, well, all right, we can't stop Donald Trump from coming to town, but we're also not going to go through the rigmarole of trying to bill his campaign and then get rejected and then some follow-up letters or demand letters. So that can be very time-consuming and expensive in and of itself. But you made a good point just a moment ago, John, about the size of the Trump rallies. The reason why some of these bills are so huge is because the rallies themselves are so huge and will attract 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 people in some cases. And also, too, some of the Trump rallies over the past several years, it can get violent. There can be protesters, counter-protesters inside the arena. The police are not there to protect Donald Trump. They're there to protect the people who are attending the rally, the people who are protesting the rallies, the people all around who might be around the arena, traffic control and whatnot. So it's a whole operation akin to if you had like a, you know, major music concert, or you had some VIP or a parade for a sports team. It's really at that level when Donald Trump comes to town.
And, you know, I know that there's been some attempts inside of government to try to get him to pay these bills. But I'm curious, have you seen any indication that it could become a campaign issue? I mean, as we pointed out, he says he's very supportive of police departments, and here he's opting not to be. Have we seen it come up in any mailers or any campaign ads or anything like that?
Yeah, there are some Democrats who are definitely talking about it. In fact, there's a Federal Election Commission complaint that has been filed by Representative Bill Pascrell of New Jersey, a Democrat. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if a super PAC or a nonprofit organization or whatnot who was anti-Trump and uses as a bludgeon against Donald Trump, especially when Donald Trump has a long litany of examples of where he has talked about his support for police, talked about his support for law enforcement. And even at some of these rallies where he wasn't paying police bills in the end, or his campaign wasn't, he would talk about how much he loved police at those rallies in themselves.
Wow.
Yeah. Not to give anyone any ideas here, of course, but certainly the facts are out there, and this information is for the having if somebody wanted to use it.
Exactly. And if anyone watching this would like more of this information, some more of the raw data, it is available at the Center for Public Integrity. As always, Dave, thank you so much for joining us. You do great work over there.
Hey, thanks so much, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.